It's time for Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And today's a little bit of a different show. Local because the author of a forthcoming book on the great conductor George Sell happens to be in town. He doesn't live here. He's not performing here, but he is writing his book through the University of Illinois Press. And of course, WYLL is part of the University of Illinois. His name is Michael Cherry. He is a conductor and was at one time a colleague of George Sell, and looking forward to talking to him for a bit about Mr. Sell and this forthcoming book. And he'll be talking to the University of Illinois School of Music conducting class also, which is why we have him just for a short bit on the show today. Conversation with Michael Cherry coming up here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. The first of the Slavonic dances, and we don't want to hear the second one, the first of the Slavonic dances by Antonin Dvorak with the Cleveland Orchestra conducted by George Sell. George Sell was born in 1897. He is probably best known for his long tenure with the Cleveland Orchestra. And we have with us in the studio today fellow conductor Michael Cherry, who was for some time conductor of the orchestras at the Manus College, New School of Music in New York City, and has traveled widely as well as a conductor in various capacities. He has written a book called George Sell, A Life of Music, with the University of Illinois Press. It's due out next June, I am told. And he's here on the University of Illinois campus to visit with his publishers. And also we'll be speaking with the University Orchestra coming up in about an hour or so. So we just have a little bit of time with him. So let's see if we can make some good use of it. First of all, Mr. Cherry, thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure, Kevin.
Why don't you start by telling us how you got to know George Sell?
I got to know George Sell first as a student at Oberlin Conservatory of Music, where the Cleveland Orchestra came four times a year to play concerts on their artist series. And I also went to Cleveland and attended many concerts at Severance Hall. But in the 1950s, the American Symphony Orchestra League, now the League of American Orchestras, published an announcement of an apprentice conductorship with the Cleveland Orchestra that George Sell was offering for those brave enough to take the audition with him. And it was a one-year appointment, a scholarship paid for by the Kulas Foundation of Cleveland, and the bulletin describes in detail what the audition would consist of, and it was just about everything that you'd need to know musically to be a conductor. And I was a little hesitant because knowing I had studied, actually I was a piano major at Oberlin, an oboe minor, and studied with the assistant principal oboist of the Cleveland Orchestra. So I knew just what Sell was. He was a phenomenal musician, memory, experience, a protege of Richard Strauss, and what he had made with that Cleveland Orchestra was just world class. So I was pretty daunting to prospect to audition for him personally. But my wife, Jane, who's always supported me, she said, well, look, what you'll get out of it will be a good experience, and the work you put in will be helpful to you to take this audition, and he may have some advice even if you don't get the position. Well, I did work, and I did all the things, and had the audition with Mr. Sell, and at the end he said, you have acquitted yourself well, and I will consider you. And so he did, and I was auditioning a year in advance because the position was filled the immediate next year, and he sent a telegram for me to call him at 9:30 on Monday morning, and I made sure that his phone rang at 9:30, and he offered me the position of apprentice conductor for 1 year, and I accepted gladly, willingly. This is for 1961. And I came for 1 year and was renewed for 2, 3, and 4 years, and by that time then I was promoted to assistant conductor, and I was assistant conductor of the orchestra. He died in 1970, so I was with him 1961 to 1970, And then I stayed 2 years until a successor was appointed to Zell, and then I went freelance after that. But I was with the Cleveland Orchestra with nine glorious years, and hearing every performance, rehearsal, recording, tour, concert, and then eventually gradually working into my own concerts and even opera with the Cleveland Orchestra. So it was a very wonderful experience, a once-in-a-lifetime, and it was a golden age, and we knew that it was nothing ever to be duplicated again with the combination of Zell and that orchestra at that time. It was a life-changing experience.
So what, you know, if you had to have a few adjectives to describe George Zell, what might they be?
Force of nature, bigger than life, awesome talent, and voluminous knowledge of music, not only orchestra music, but the entire literature, vocal, chamber, opera, orchestra. He was a consummate musician, but he was also knowledgeable about anything in the world that was worth knowing. He was intense. He was thoroughly disciplined and very demanding of himself first, and then everybody around him felt the electricity. And he was a presence that was so powerful that whenever he was in residence and not away guest conducting, the Severance Hall was swept cleaner than when he wasn't around. It went to that level from top to bottom.
You mean literally that people would clean it up a little better before he showed
up? Yes. It was just, his presence was generated a kind of electricity, and you just knew that you were in the presence of some wisdom and knowledge that was so far superior to anything you've ever dreamed of, that it was a great pleasure and an honor to be accepted into that organization. And every day was, the orchestra felt, was like an audition. And I felt it too, just, you know, you had to be at 110% all the time. And it was worth it because the results were so glorious.
Was he one of those conductors who, at least, I think we have images of the stereotype at the time of being autocratic and fearsome and so on, or was he a more gentle soul?
He was an aristocrat, but he was more on the autocratic, but he was never petty or mean or personal. For him, the composer was the most important thing, the highest respect for the composer of, and he was himself, had been a virtuoso pianist when he was a child prodigy, and at the age of 14, he was given a 10-year exclusive publishing contract by Universal Edition in Vienna for his compositions, and he was called at the time the new Mozart. Mm. The thing about him was that you always knew exactly what was expected, and there were no tricks. Except once in a while, he would sort of tease a little bit, like the time when he had a free day on tour in Northampton, Massachusetts. And he said, well, let's go up to the music room, at Smith College, I've reserved a room, and we'll play some a score beforehand. I said, oh, that's wonderful. What score will it be? He said, I will bring it. Which meant end of it. So we met the next morning, and he had the score clutched under his arm, so I couldn't tell what it was. And just a little playful. We went up to the music building, and he opened it up, and it was Mahler's Symphony No. 4, which was so logical because he'd been performing it with wonderful soprano Judith Raskin in the fourth movement, and we'd been performing it in Severance Hall, performing it on tour, and this is a few days before a Carnegie Hall performance, which is always very important to him. And so he said, well, let's read through it. Now, he drew an imaginary line at middle C, and he said, I'll play all the instruments above middle C, and you play all the instruments below middle C. And whether the wind, brass, whatever it was, that was just wherever their territory was, you play. And so we started through the first movement, and he was roaring up and down the keyboard, and I was absolutely not going a semitone above middle C. He was, of course, whenever he got involved with the music, he knew it so well. He'd been conducting it for 50 years. He went below middle C very often. I was so happy that he took notes I didn't have to worry about. And we're doodling along, and I once in a while would do a difficult transposition like French horns in F in the bass clef, and I'd, you see, and he'd as he was grabbing fistfuls of notes, he'd look down and he'd say, not bad, you know. And that was a great moment. And after that, he said, oh, I wish I had more time to spend like this with you boys, you know, because he was very warm and personal in private. In public, he was very correct and appropriate for his position and the fact that we were staff and working with him. I was a co-assistant conductor the last few years of when I was with him, with James Levine, who came as an apprentice conductor and was promoted to assistant conductor at the same time. We were co-assistant conductors. But that kind of experience is just, you know, priceless, wonderful memory of a musical sharing. And of course, whenever I had a concert or a performance with the orchestra early on, he would invite me to, on 10 days' notice, to conduct a piece that he didn't need to conduct on a subscription concert like Pictures and Exhibitions. I had 10 days to learn how to, you know, really to learn the score. And he was at rehearsals, and he I memorized it. In those days, he had knew everything from memory. So anybody who was expecting to have the respect of the orchestra had to know the scores from memory. So I memorized Pictures Exhibition in the few days, and he watched my rehearsals. And so we said goodbye backstage, and I went out and started the first movement, and the trumpets and the brasses were fine. And I turned to the strings to my left, to the violins, and then they came in, and I saw that hadn't gone back to his box to observe from the audience, but he was observing from the little window that the stagehands used to open and close the door to the entrance to the stage. So he was sitting on a stool watching, and I saw his face right behind the first violins. Well, I avoided the violins. From then on, during the performance, I got through it. At the end, all he said was, why did you pause so much between the movements? Only criticism. I said, oh, I never thought of that. And the pacing of it, he was always aware of minute things like pacing and timing, because he was a great theater conductor, opera. He was with Richard Strauss, and when he was in his teens, he was an assistant at the Berlin Opera with Strauss, so he was a seasoned theater conductor. So I just tightened up the pauses between movements, and it went smoothly from there on. But he had a face with very thick glasses and a very severe face. Very, his hair was thin, and so seeing that framed in the window was kind of a shock. But he had nothing bad to say other than tighten it up, the performance.
So when you were preparing something for the orchestra, would he coach you on pieces? Would he watch you during rehearsals?
Yes, he did. He did all of those things, particularly at first. Well, when the apprentice conductors, of which there were one or two apprentice conductors and a fellow conductor on scholarship that he established for conductor study, we would have a session with him, and we play piano for each other under his supervision in a private rehearsal. And then when we had the orchestra, he would be behind us and the orchestra in front of us, and we were sort of like between a rock and a hard place, because facing the Cleveland Orchestra was daunting. One guest conductor said that he thought facing the Cleveland Orchestra was like facing 100 little cells. And when the real cell was behind you and he was in, and the orchestra was in front of you, you were really in a hot spot. But he would give good comments, stop us and make comments, and he was interested. And we did our special Sunday concert devoted to the apprentice conductors and the fellow conductors once a year for the first 4 years. And then gradually I had a piece on his program, and of course he would be in town. And later on I had my own independent subscription concerts, and he wasn't there. But we did start an opera company. Lewis Lane, the associate conductor, and I started an opera company with the Cleveland Orchestra, calling it the Lake Erie Opera Theater for technical reasons. And Zell came from summer working vacation, and heard the last performance of the opera, which was usually my last performance, because Lane would conduct the first production, I would conduct the second production. And so he was always came to the performance, and whatever it was, like Johnny Skiki or Prokofiev, I did the Love for Three Oranges. He was very complimentary about how the orchestra sounded. And when I did a Capriccio of Richard Strauss, he said that that was the way Strauss would have wanted the orchestra to sound. Of course, he was very much complimenting his orchestra, who sounded just glorious in that wonderful score. But he told me that I was a natural opera conductor, born opera conductor. So that was the only time I heard him praise himself. And he was very spare with any kind of praise. And the, his criticism was pointed to musical things. But after his last Eroica performance in Severance Hall, 1970, the last subscription concert before an extended tour of the 1970 Expo in Japan, Osaka, and we played all over Japan. He conducted the Eroica, which was a piece he conducted on his first program as music director and his last program as music director, and he played it many times. And after the last performance, my duty as associate producer of the broadcasts for WCLV in Cleveland and the syndication was to come to him and decide which movements we took. We didn't cut and paste like they do with recordings now and digitally. No, we just used one movement from this or a whole piece from Saturday or from Thursday, and I had to come and he would give me the what he his opinion was he wanted to have for the broadcast. And he said, but he would always say, well, you had to speak first. I had to speak first. He said, what I would choose. I said, well, I think the Haydn on Saturday was a little something or other, a little looser or a little more. He said, yes, but Thursday was closer to the rehearsals, so we'll take Thursday. But he always started that way. Well, after this Eroica performance, the only thing he ever commented on his own, on his conducting was, on the orchestra was, well, that was a performance. That was it. That was his highest, the only praise for credit he took for himself.
Ever. Well, as it happens, I've actually queued up a movement from the Eroica, coincidentally, I guess, with Georges Zell and the Cleveland Orchestra. This recording from 1958, I guess. Where would that have fallen in his tenure?
He came to the Cleveland Orchestra in 1946, and he died in 1970.
So right about in the middle.
Right in the middle, yeah.
The
orchestra was already at its pinnacle, had reached its pinnacle, and from where it went by minute degrees, but continued growing, but it was already great.
Severance Hall, Cleveland, actually 1957. Here's some of the scherzo of Beethoven's Third Symphony here on Live and Local. That was the scherzo, the third movement from the Third Symphony of Ludwig van Beethoven, his Eroica Symphony. George Zell leading the Cleveland Orchestra from 1957. And you heard it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We're talking with Michael Cherry, who is author of a forthcoming book called George Zell, A Life of Music. And he just told, well, he said before we played this that this was, I guess, the first piece he conducted when he got to Cleveland, the last piece when he conducted when he left Cleveland, and then you just added as we were listening that it was also the last piece he ever conducted.
That's right. We were on tour in 1970 at the Osaka World Fair Expo, and played all over Japan and then Seoul, Korea, and Anchorage, Alaska on the way home was our last concert, and that was the last piece on that concert, the Eroica. And it's the cover of the book is a triple montage by Peter Hastings, the official photographer of the orchestra in the 60s, who I knew, and he made this triple montage of Zell conducting while he was conducting the Eroica.
So this piece obviously had some particular significance to him.
Absolutely, yes. And Beethoven was very important. Beethoven and Mozart were his gods, because he respected all great composers. That was part of his philosophy, that composers are important.
Yeah. Well, they did write the music, after all. And you wrote the book, so, you know, before we have to let you go and go talk to the conducting class, we should actually talk a little bit about the book itself. How did you put it together? I have a note here that you got to talk, that you used some interviews you made with him
folks. I knew him, of course, but I interviewed him officially on the 1965 tour of Soviet Union and Russia and Western Europe. I was a radio station in Cleveland hired me to file weekly reports by tape and then mail them to them. And one of the times I actually interviewed Zell just at his birthday, June 7th, which is, by the way, when the book starts shipping from the publisher this year. But this was in 1965. And the idea of the book was Mrs. Sells, his widow. He died in 1970, and she tried, and I tried to help her. I said I would research for anybody, a legitimate author, writer, and we tried many people who had written about Sells or who'd been written about music, and she tried, and I tried, and nothing worked out. And eventually I thought this is too important a musical force, a musical presence to not to be documented. And so I set about to, it became my project. And I interviewed people like Joseph Gingold and Myron Bloom, the first horn, and Cloyd Duff, the timpanist, and Rebecca Sadasur, Erica Marini, artists who performed with Sell, people in the orchestra who had been there before Sell, and I had materials from all over the world where I guest conducted in Holland, in the Holland Festival in 76. I went to the Concertgebouw and the Residence Orchestra and had free access to their archives. I wrote to Australia, where he had conducted in 1938 and 39, and they sent me packets of clippings reviews of new human interest articles about his coming. Professor Georg Sell is coming, and then his reviews of the concert, description, and internal memos of the Australian Broadcasting Commission, now corporation at the time. And I had friends sent me material from Scotland, where he was conductor of the Scottish Orchestra. And I was in St. Louis, where he conducted in 1930 and 31 as a guest and almost got the job. But Vladimir Goldschmidt nosed him out of it. And I went to the archives of the orchestra and to the newspaper in St. Louis. So I've had a whole source of material besides my own personal recollections, access to the Cleveland Orchestra archives, and the archivists there have been wonderful. And I must say that the experience with working with the University of Illinois Press, Laurie Matheson has been the acquiring editor, has been superb, has been professional, supportive, friendly, knowledgeable. I can't imagine a more benevolent relationship between author and publisher, and I've heard so many stories about war stories about this kind of interaction. So I feel very fortunate to be published by this distinguished publisher.
Is this your first authoring experience?
I've written many articles, program notes, published an article in 1987, the 90th anniversary of Sell's birth, for Keynote magazine. That was a WNCN radio station magazine edited by Sedgwick Clark, who's now editor of the Musical America annual edition. So I've written a lot, but this is my first and only book, and it's the first book about, a full-length book about Sell. There is a fine book about the Cleveland Orchestra by Donald Rosenberg, critic of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and I helped him with some chapters on Sell, and he read my book a few times and gave me some suggestions years back. So it's been an ongoing process for many, many decades, and I feel that it's in its best shape that it can be, and I try to be fair and balanced as far as Sell's personality. He had quirks, and he had shortcomings, and he was a complex individual, brilliant, intense, and musically impeccable, absolutely the highest taste and knowledge that one could imagine. It was just thrilling. I tried to put that in perspective in writing the book chronologically, from his earliest times as a child prodigy to his death in 1970.
So you've really been working on it for decades?
Yes, I have.
With the intention of writing the book, or just collecting things?
Yes, started out helping Mrs. Sell, and then I wound up accepting the burden. And I just, I would write when I was out of work. I had more time to write on the book. And when I was conducting a lot, I had put it aside for a while. It was not full time all that time.
Yeah.
But it grew. It grew and developed, and it became too big, and then I had to cut it, and it, now it's I think in the most concise and most meaningful shape that it could be, with the help of many fine people, editors along the way.
Well, it's not a daunting length. It's under 400 pages.
376, they tell me.
That's what it says right here. In 6.125 by 9.25 inches in dimensions.
Yes, to come out in June.
And there are photos, which is always fun.
A lot of photos. Some of them I took. Some of them were from various other sources, and including the cover photo, photographer Peter Hastings, and many photos of Sell.
Well, we're looking forward to, I'm looking forward to seeing it, and I'm very glad that, that you were able to come in and talk with us today.
My pleasure, Kevin.
And I know we need to let you go and talk to the conducting class here at the University of Illinois with Don Schleicher, who's the conductor of the orchestra here, and they'll get many pearls of wisdom from you. Are you going to be mostly talking about Zell or just various
talk
things?
Talk about the book and how it, my title is George Zell, His Life and Career, and Inside Look on his at his Cleveland Orchestra and my personal experiences. I'll do as much as I can in the short time and be available for questions during and after.
I'm sure there'll be many. Yes. George Zell, A Life in Music, author is Michael Cherry. It's due out next June from the University of Illinois
Press.
Can
be ordered online.
Can be ordered online.
It's anytime now.
press.uillinois.edu for more information. And thanks very much for joining us on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Our show is made possible in part with support from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign, celebrating their 25th year of fair trade retail in downtown Champaign. 10,000 Villages offers ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards. And we have support from Champaign-Urbana Ballet, presenting a holiday tradition, The Nutcracker, with Sinfonia da Camera at Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, December 3rd through the 5th. More information is available at krannertcenter.com. or 333-6280. Here's George Zell leading the Cleveland Orchestra in the prelude to Act One of Richard Wagner's opera Die Meistersinger, or The Master Singers of Nuremberg. And this is a recording from 1962 on Live and Local. Prelude to Die Meistersinger, The Master Singers, by Richard Wagner. George Zell leading the Cleveland Orchestra, a concert at Severance Hall in Cleveland, 1962. Well, it may or may not have been a concert, but in any event, the recording was made at Severance Hall. And you heard it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show today, rather than focusing on the live performance coming up in our listening areas, has focused on George Zell through the eyes of Michael Cherry, who is a fellow conductor, is a former conductor of the Manus Orchestra at Manus College in the New School of Music in New York City. He also was the conducting professor there for some time and guest conductor of many other orchestras and was a protege of George Zell. He is also the author of George Zell, A Life of Music with the University of Illinois Press. It's due out next June. And for more information, you can go to press.uillinois.edu and find it on there. We'll hear more from George Zell in a little bit. Coming up at a minute past 1 o'clock on 90.9 FM, you'll be hearing the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor on 101.1 FM. We'll stay with classical music. 90.9 listeners will go back to classical music starting at 106. Here are some events going on in our listening area. You can go out and see and hear live. Margaret Murphy and Chuck Webb are playing jazz at Remy's on Monroe in Springfield tonight at 8:30. In Urbana tomorrow night, the University of Illinois Jazz Band 3 is playing at the Krannert Center at 7:30. This must be the Illini Symphony, or would be the Uvi Philharmonia, I guess, is at Smith Memorial Hall tomorrow night at 7:30. Somewhat cryptic note here on my calendar. Faculty instrumental recital by Chi Hyun Choi. I'm not sure what the instrument is, not indicated on my calendar. That's at Kuiper Hall in Decatur on the campus of Millikan University. That's tomorrow night at 7:30. And the Decatur Choral Society presents Opus 24, Fall Choral Concert, tomorrow night, also in Decatur. That's at St. Patrick Catholic Church, 7:30 tomorrow night. Parkland College Theater is presenting Nuncrackers, the Nonsense Christmas Musical at Parkland College Theater. That starts Wednesday evening at 7:30, and we'll be having some members of the cast sing for us live on Wednesday's show. Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra is giving their holiday concert with the Central Illinois Children's Chorus Wednesday evening in Urbana at the Krannert Center at 7:30. The U of I Jazz Band 4 is also at the Krannert Center Wednesday evening at 7:30. And a saxophone recital by Perry Rask at Millikan University in Decatur is Wednesday evening at 6 o'clock in Kuiper Hall. And we'll be talking with Steve Larson, conductor of the CU Symphony, tomorrow on our show about Wednesday's holiday concert. Here's George Sell and the Cleveland Orchestra, joined by pianist Leon Fleischer. This is the first movement of Beethoven's second piano concerto. Thank you.